We are just days away from President-elect Trump being sworn back into office. This will be a four-year reprieve, I guess you could say, because we did this just about 8 years ago when he was sworn in the first time at the 2017 inauguration. Well, now, on Monday, the presidential inauguration will be held in Washington, D.C., right in front of the Capitol building, where President-elect Trump will put his right hand up and his left hand on the Bible and swear his oath to the Constitution. And it'll be a done deal. He will be the 47th president of the United States. So we're going to be watching what news develops out of that. But the people that he's picked to serve alongside him, well, that isn't exactly a done deal yet. A number of President-elect Trump's cabinet nominees were up on Capitol Hill this week for confirmation hearings with the respective Senate committees. Among them were DHS Secretary nominee Kristi Noem, EPA pick Lee Zeldin, Department of Interior nominee Doug Burgum, Treasury pick Scott Bessent, and HUD nominee Scott Turner. But two in particular have grabbed headlines over the course of the week. Defense nominee Pete Hegseth and Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi face tough questions and at times heated exchanges with senators. Hegseth was pressed about his past comments regarding women in the military, sexual assault allegations, reports of financial misconduct, and substance abuse. Now, the big criticism here from him is the flip-flopping, because he previously said that he didn't want women serving in combat in the U.S. military, but now he's changed that. Now he says, oh yeah, it's all great. And he was called out about that with New Hampshire Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen. She basically said, listen, I have this book excerpt here of you saying you don't want them there, and now you're saying you do want women to serve in combat. Well, which is it? That is what he was pressed on regarding his views on that point. Read a quote from his book, and he basically just says, well, my stance has now changed. That was the gist of that one. But then it didn't stop there. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand confronted him on his statements regarding women, mothers, and LGBTQ service members, saying, quote, you said in your statement you don't want politics. Everything you've said in these public statements is politics. And what's with moms, by the way? Once you have babies, you're no longer able to be lethal, close quote. And he also got a bit of a beating from Hawaii Democratic Senator Mazie Hirono when she asked him about his drinking habits, and specifically saying that he would have to reiterate his pledge that he made to Senate Republicans in his private meetings that he would not be drinking while on the job. Then things got a little testier where Hirono asked him whether he would resign if he were to get back to the bottle and start drinking again, to which Hegseth didn't really commit to, which that's something that the Democrats seized on throughout that hearing. Well, you know, you won't answer these questions, you're evading them, to where he would say they're fabricated media concoctions. That's a lot of what the responses were. Well, for this one, Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen came to his defense saying, quote, how many senators have shown up drunk to vote at night. How many senators have gotten divorced for cheating? Close quote. Then to wrap it all up, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine pressed Hegseth on his past relationships and sexual assault allegations, with Hegseth responding that he's failed in many aspects of his life, but he's redeemed himself by his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And that wasn't the only hearing that took place on Capitol Hill this week. Then you got to go over to Pam Bondi. In her confirmation hearing, Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi was pushed by Democrats to take a stance on the 2020 election results. Bondi said, quote, "Joe Biden is the president," close quote. She was also pressed on FBI Director nominee Kash Patel's comments about arresting political opponents and journalists and bringing an enemies list to the Bureau. Bondi says she doesn't believe there is, in fact, an enemies list, and none would be adopted by the DOJ. Bondi, for the most part throughout this hearing, maintained that, you know, the Justice Department would be independent under her watch, and that we're going to go after, we're going to file the facts and go after these cases and charges and investigations as we see fit. And when asked specifically about like certain probes, she really didn't answer that. And that's something the Democrats went all into there. But Republicans, for the most part, were happy with Bondi and how, you know, especially when it came to January 6th stuff, saying that she would not be advocating for any type of pardoning for violent offenders in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And then there was also the aspect of how involved she would be into that. And the Republicans were trying to defend her, saying she's had the qualifications, she's been a state attorney general before, and that she would be able to handle this job. Well, the Democrats largely saying, well, is she going to be controlled by Trump? Will Trump let her stay in there? Mainly going to the Jeff Sessions thing, where he had to recuse himself from the Russia investigation, to which Trump gave him grief. And also with Bill Barr, where once the 2020 election results stuff started coming up, he had to jump ship. So that is what the Democrats are alluding to and really are trying to stick Bondi to. And then also, don't forget her own personal lobbying things there, where she has some alleged lobbying conflict of interest. The Democrats are wondering, oh, would you be able to prosecute these people if it came down to it, considering that you have past relationships with them that could complicate that? That is something the Democrats dug into, as well as the fact that she is a Trump attorney and now being nominated to this role, wondering whether that she would be willing to stand up to Trump, considering the fact that she has been so loyal to him and is now taking a job that requires a lot of independence. So Democrats saying, like, yeah, what is it? And she's maintaining that she'd be able to uphold that level of independence that the Justice Department has historically been known for, and that, you know, she would not have this quote-unquote two-tier justice system, referring, of course, to the Trump cases where Republicans have said that these have been slanted against them, and Trump in particular, and that these cases would have not happened if they were being carried out towards Democrats. So there's that aspect of it, too, where both sides right now are talking about justice and accusing one of another or having this perceived special treatment of justice. So with Bondi's appointment to this, she has to obviously keep going with that line. She's trying to walk the line here of being this independent-minded, fair attorney general, but also having to play to the Trump crowd of, all right, we're going to do all this stuff to where the government's not going to be weaponized anymore, and we're going to look at all these people, see if there were any indiscretions there. So she has to put the coalition together to be able to get over the finish line, because she needs the Trump people, but she also needs some of the more moderate Republicans who may not like that idea and want more of an independent-minded, free-thinking attorney general, like the Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowskis of the world. These two ladies are going to be possibly what makes or breaks these nominees. Because remember, J.D. Vance is not in the picture right now. We are waiting for Vance to step down, and how long is it going to take Mike DeWine's pick to come in? The Ohio governor. Now, Ron DeSantis has announced Ashley Moody to fill Marco Rubio's seat. So once he resigns there, Ashley Moody will come in. And she'll be there until they get to hold the special election. So Moody will be, she'll be there for the rest of Rubio's term, or however long it is until that special election comes in place. So she will be voting most likely in favor of these people. And considering she is from Florida and is an attorney general there, Bondi would definitely be favorable for her. Hegseth probably going to go along with that too, if I had to guess. So that's what the coalition is going to look like. And that is what has to be done in order to get these people across the finish line. Now, the big thing with Hegseth is that there was a skeptical senator who was not on board with Hegseth, almost angling for the job herself. And that would be Joni Ernst, because when Hegseth was underwater with all these allegations, there were rumors Trump was considering other people. And the top of the list was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, but he was also considering Joni Ernst, the senator from Iowa who has served in combat. And she was expressing skepticism, too, of Hegseth. Now, you know, there could be an argument made out there that maybe she was trying to angle for the job herself, and there was some self-opportunistic kind of attitude behind this. But it could be, as a combat veteran, she had concerns, especially regarding his policy on women serving in combat, and to which she kind of said, yeah, I would allow that. And that seemed to be enough for her, because she said shortly after this confirmation hearing wrapped up, she was like, I'm all in. I'm going to vote for Hegseth. So she would have been potentially the third vote that could have sunk this thing. But now that she's on board, it's really Murkowski and Collins, who haven't really indicated either way where they're going to go, whether they're going to vote for Hegseth and whether they're going to vote for Bondi. Now, obviously, Bondi more likely than Hegseth is the real question mark. Bondi, there doesn't seem to be much concern that the Republicans are having the votes there. It seems at this point that the Democrats are not voting for Hegseth at all, and not really Bondi either. Maybe she'll get one. Maybe she'll get John Fetterman in there. It's not going to be like the Marco Rubios of the world, who are going to get close to 60 votes. Because with Marco Rubio, he's got his buddies on the Intel Committee and then the Foreign Relations Committee. He's got all these people who he's worked with. Mark Warner, Tim Kaine, both Virginia senators, Democrats, who are probably going to vote for him. And then John Fetterman, too. And he's been around for a while, so he's a guy who probably is going to get a lot of support. While the people like Pete Hegseth, who have some skeletons in the closet, may have a tougher road ahead of them. They're going to have to do some head counts and see what the final number is. It may be 51. And with Bondi, she might get to 53. Because 53 is the magic number, because that's how many Republicans there are. If everybody shows up, that is it. They're going to have 53 seats in the Senate. And that's not going to change anytime soon that we know of, because Ohio, their election, once DeWine fills that seat, is not going to be until 2026. So It's not going to be till next November. Not this November, but next November. So time there, and Ohio seems to be leading red, so that's looking good for the Republicans. And then Florida, where they've had massive double-digit wins for statewide races for Republicans in recent years, that seems highly unlikely to change either, especially since they already have a familiar face in the seat, Ashley Moody. And if Moody's going to run for a full term, she would probably be in a good position for that. So given that math, that is what the Republicans are trying to bank on here and see if they can get these people across the finish line. And the Trump team, too. Because Hegseth is the bet. That's the toughest one for them. If they can get Hegseth through, they can probably get just about anybody through. Well, there is Tulsi Gabbard, who we haven't seen that hearing yet. Rumors are, you know, you might be able to think that maybe they don't have the votes yet. Maybe she's going to meet with a few more people, which seems like that's what she's doing. So we're going to see when that hearing finally gets scheduled. Maybe it has since this recording. Always check your sources on that. But for right now, it does not appear she has anything on the books. So she might be a tougher road ahead. RFK Jr., controversial, yes, but he does have a lot of support from the American people. He's one of the more popular cabinet picks out there. It's like him and Rubio. They're like top of list. And Kristi Noem's kind of on the top of the list, too. With all those people, they're probably, despite, you know, being traditionally not the ones you would pick for these roles, although Rubio is very traditional, really more RFK Jr., but Noem, you know, a little bit. Maybe you wouldn't have thought of her for that role. You might have thought of her for something else. But for these people, they are very likely to get confirmed with all the Republicans and maybe even some Democrats hopping the fence and coming to their side. So we will see what ultimately happens here. Still more confirmation hearings to go. We got a lot of them done this week, but there are more. We have Kash Patel too, because that also is an aspect of this whole Pam Bondi thing. The Democrats are trying to pit her against Kash Patel. Another fine line she's got to walk, because Kash Patel is a big deal among the Trump crowd. They really like this guy. But at the same time, he's got some things in his past that they might not be accepted by the mainstream. So she has to accept that, where he is going to be under her jurisdiction, but she can't really interfere too much. Otherwise, it's going to piss off his crowd, the Trump crowd, and therefore her job is at risk. So again, she's going to have to play nice with Patel. At the same time, keep him at arm's length. And that's kind of what she did in this hearing, where she's like, I don't know, I don't see any of these lists. I don't know what you're talking about. And the Democrats, and of course, insisting that there is one. So we'll see if this is all enough. We're going to get some of the first votes we're hearing on Monday, which is traditional, that's standard. The last Trump term, we saw James Mattis, the defense secretary, and John Kelly for Homeland. Those guys got in on day one. And it was like pretty overwhelming vote margins that those guys got. So that will be pretty good. So they're going to probably do something like that, national security related, or somebody they know they get. Like a Marco Rubio type is probably going to be. They haven't announced it yet, as far as I can tell, what nominees are going to be voted on, but most likely expect Rubio to be on that list, because Rubio is a pretty beloved figure on Capitol Hill. So he probably is going to have that for sure. So we'll be watching that. We'll be seeing what happens, and we'll be bringing you the updates as we get them. Now, here's what we're getting in the middle of this week. Governor Murphy took a jab at New York City's congestion pricing in his State of the State address this week. In the speech, Murphy said, quote, "We have created new dedicated funding streams to support the future of NJ Transit. And by the way, We didn't mooch off our neighbors to meet our fiscal needs, and we have not stopped fighting for 1 second to defend our commuters going in and out of New York. Stay tuned, close quote. This comes as Murphy also vouched for phone-free schools. He basically wants to ban cell phones for students in K through 12 schools throughout the state. Also wants to try and implement universal free pre-K and 12 weeks of paid family leave for state employees. Well, joining me now is Democratic gubernatorial candidate and New Jersey 5th District Congressman Josh Gottheimer. Congressman Gottheimer, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Joey. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. It's good to be here.
So let's start by talking about the big issue affecting commuters right now, especially those traveling between New Jersey and New York. You have been a huge opponent of congestion pricing. You have introduced legislation in the past to stop the policy from going into place, and you're planning on bringing up a new bill to address this issue. What will that legislation look like?
Well, you know, first, as you know, this is to your point, this is something I've been fighting for years because it's outrageous on many levels. One, at a time when people are dealing with higher prices, to whack hardworking families who are trying to make ends meet with a yet another tax is ridiculous, right? And this is $9 a day to drive into New York on top of what folks pay to go over the GW Bridge or through the Lincoln and the Holland, right? So for us, that's a lot of money, especially, you know, you're a nurse, a teacher, electrician, right? A cop or a firefighter. It's just really brutal. And the second thing is it leads to, by the MTA, which is the mass transit system in New York, right, by their own admission, it will lead to a ton of new pollution in northern New Jersey because it'll change the traffic patterns and all these trucks will avoid paying this tax. So they'll go to the GW Bridge to avoid going to Manhattan or to go higher up in Manhattan where there is no congestion tax. So for our families and our kids, it's a disaster on multiple fronts, right? The health of the of families and kids and what they breathe in, these cancer-causing pollution coming out of trucks, and then the costs. So what we're doing is saying, not so fast, the MTA. If you want to double dip like you've been doing forever, where you take federal money, right, because you get they get federal subsidies for the mass transit system in New York. If you take that money, you can't also whack Jersey and New York families with a congestion tax. So you got to pick. And they've obviously picked their poison here. And so they would lose their any new federal grants if they continue to go forward. And that's what my bipartisan legislation does.
Yeah, and you've introduced bills in the past to address this issue, but nothing really came of them until now, really. Have you gotten any type of firm commitment from House leadership that they're going to bring up these pieces of legislation to the floor?
Well, you know, you got lots of people who aren't exactly thrilled with the MTA here in the halls of Congress. And by the way, you heard the president-elect has also weighed in on this as well, as you know. So you've got a lot of people who are pissed about these costs and what New York is doing. So I think the momentum is building now that they've actually jumped the shark and are going ahead with it, right? Or have gone ahead with it. And you got to understand also, the MTA is one of the worst run mass transit systems in the country. It's kind of legendary how poorly they're run. You know, they lost $700 million in 2023 to fare skimmers, people who just jump the turnstile. I'm sure you've heard about this. And 50% of people who ride the buses in New York now, this is by the MTA's own report, don't pay to ride. They just jump on and don't pay. So that means that you're paying for it. Your listeners are paying for it, right? They're subsidizing all these people. And so people have had it. And I think the fact that New York has decided to just disregard everybody's opinion here, including New Yorkers, right? Including small businesses and New York families, people in the outer boroughs who are getting crushed or in Westchester, you know, the other areas, like they've all had it. And I think New York just doesn't care, clearly. And they just want to keep hitting people with more and more taxes and fees. And so that's really what you're seeing here.
I know you're getting increasing support for this, including from the president-elect who's going to be taking office in the coming week here. But in terms of a timeline for getting these pieces of legislation up, I mean, the president-elect in the past has floated he's going to get rid of it within his first week of office. Do you have that kind of commitment that it's going to be coming within the next week or 2 weeks or within the next month? Do we know when we could actually see a vote on this legislation?
I don't. I've not directly spoken to the president-elect about this. You know, I've seen what you've seen, and I've just heard from their folks about it, but I don't know their exact strategy. I know from a legislative strategy that we're driving ahead to introduce these bills and pushing very hard to get them airtime on the floor so we can get a vote going. You know, the point overall, and you've got the courts continue to weigh in here. You've got, in fact, rulings coming up over the next days that are going to go back and forth over what New York's going to do to deal with this increased pollution that's going to affect northern New Jersey and the outer boroughs of New York, especially where there's, you know, harder pressed families who live. And you know, so the question is, what is New York going to do about it? So there's a lot of stuff swirling about here. So, you know, the coming attraction is there's still a lot of balls in the air of where this can go. But what hasn't changed is this is outrageous. And New York is sticking it to Jersey, and I'll continue to fight back as I always have, you know, until we deal with this thing. I'm not going to be quiet about it.
You said you haven't spoken directly with the president-elect, but you've spoken with people on his team. Is that correct? You're in constant...
Well, I've heard from a lot of people you've got a lot of members who've been in touch. As you probably know, I think a few of them were down over the last days with him, who I've spoken to about some of their conversations, and there's other discussions that we've had, and I'm not going to go into all of them here because they're ongoing negotiations, but the bottom line is we're working literally every single angle to try to stop this thing and give people some tax relief and make sure they're not getting whacked with more costs, more fees, and this congestion tax.
You've said in the past that you're willing to work with the president-elect on this. You've even said it now that, you know, whatever it takes to get this done. What would you like from him? Is it just a matter of getting this legislation through Congress and getting him to sign it? Or is there something from the executive branch that he could do when he gets in office that he doesn't need congressional sign-off on for that could lead to an end to congestion pricing?
I mean, by the way, that's exactly the right question to ask. And you know, frankly, I think my sense is they're working through every path to see what they could do through executive action or what would require legislative action. And that's, you know, those are the conversations that are happening right now. And, you know, I've been pretty clear. I'll work with anyone if it's good for Jersey and lives up to our values, man. Like, if it's going to save people money in Jersey and lower taxes and lower costs for them, I'm there. Like, right, that's always, you know, that's why I always look at things through that lens of how I'm going to help folks out. And you know, and I'll work with anyone if it's good for Jersey.
Now, what have your opponents in the gubernatorial primary, Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop, has come out in favor of congestion pricing and even suggested that the Garden State should apply the policy onto cars coming into New Jersey. Now, I know you're against that idea, but if congestion pricing continues on, are you willing to put that as a negotiation tool with the state of New York? Say, hey, listen, if you're going to put a congestion tax onto us, we're going to do it back to you, and we'll remove it when you get rid of yours.
Listen, I think, and I know the mayor of Jersey City and I disagree about our views on the congestion tax. He supports taxing our commuters. I don't. And, you know, listen, my feeling is I want people to come to New Jersey and shop in New Jersey and right, and support our stores and restaurants. And I want to encourage people to come in, which is exactly why I think what they propose is outrageous and ridiculous for their businesses. And, you know, what I want to do is encourage everybody to come from New York into New Jersey to use our stores and go to our restaurants. And that's my hope and my plan, to just do more to try to grow our state and get more people here. I don't want to disincentivize them from coming. The way you say to New York about this is, hey, we've had a cooperative relationship for 100+ years with the Port Authority, right? With our rails, our roads, right? The bridges and tunnels, with our ports and airports. It's always 20% of the GDP of the whole country runs through this area in northern New Jersey and New York, right? In the tri-state area. It makes no sense that one of the parties, New York, has decided, despite all of this cooperation over the years, that they're just going to stick it to us and go it alone, right? And not give a penny to New Jersey, not only stick it to our families, but then not even give a penny from the congestion tax to New Jersey to help our families is outrageous, right? And it shows their attitude. And I think we should fight back against them overall and how they stick it to us in the Port Authority, how their entire approach is they're on their own instead of operating in a cooperative manner. And I'm hoping that they change their tune on that. If not, we'll use all the levers of government, and I won't be afraid as governor to do so, to actually to stand up to them and say, I don't think so enough.
You bring up the fact that you are running for governor and you possibly could be in that seat a year from now determining the policy on this. If you were in Governor Murphy's shoes right now, what would you be doing to address congestion pricing? And if at this point, if it wasn't solved by 2026, what would you be doing then? What's your strategy?
There are plenty of things where we work together on the Port Authority and where we've done obviously deals together where we help them, right? And we've done a lot for them. And frankly, all that should be on the table right now. Why are we, if we're going to have this cooperative relationship, it's got to be cooperative. And they stick it to us on a lot of fronts. For instance, on tax policy. If you work in New Jersey, if you work in New York for an hour from New Jersey and go into New York for an hour, they come after you for your income tax. They do nothing on multiple fronts to show that cooperative relationship. And I think it's time we stood up to them and said not so fast on multiple fronts. And that's exactly what I plan to do, to say to them and not to look at the whole relationship and say, you know, this was supposed to be cooperative. It's not. Well, we're going to stop playing ball on multiple fronts until you change your tune.
Are you implying that we should tax New Yorkers who come to New Jersey to work? Is that what you're saying? If the congestion pricing doesn't go away within the next year?
If you are a New Yorker and work in New Jersey, just like you were and make your income in New Jersey, of course you should pay income taxes to New Jersey. That's the way it should be, right? And we often don't go after that income tax from a New Yorker who works in New Jersey. That's what you're supposed to do. And what I'm saying to you is we often don't go after that income from somebody who works, who lives in New York and works in New Jersey, right? You get a free ride. And I'm against that. Because New York, by the way, if you work in New York for an hour, they go after every penny. And you know, that affects the dollars that we have in New Jersey to be able to invest in our infrastructure, in our families, right, in our education, in our law enforcement and firefighters, right? So, you know, what I'm saying is New York gets away with a lot, and we've let them get away with a lot. And I think, and they've done so on the Port Authority too, and taken more than their share. And I think it's outrageous.
So I know this is obviously the worst case scenario here, but how would you do that? Would you just empower the state treasurer to essentially apply this tax? Would it be through the state legislature helping you out? What would be your strategy? Or would it just be a general audit of trying to figure out?
They have a huge office that does tax policy. And I think we have to be more aggressive in what we collect from New Yorkers. And by the way, I'd put you on it, Joey. I'd put you on the case.
Wow, that's a pretty honor there. I don't know. You're trying to sway my vote here. I don't know. That might be a conflict of interest here.
We got to get you going after the New Yorkers. I'll give you a list of the names. You can read them online. You can read them on the radio.
Well, that's an interesting way of doing it. I don't know if I've ever thought of myself. A Gottheimer campaign surrogate going after, well, actually, it wouldn't be campaign. It'd be government official at that point, going after tax auditor.
I mean, they're ripping off Jersey. Listen, I'm just sick of us getting ripped off, man. I don't like when anyone rips us off. I don't like when people try to stick it to us. Like, I just generally believe we got to figure out ways to make life more affordable in Jersey, and we just can't let other people run over us. And listen, it's like you got Pennsylvania next door. They actively steal our jobs and businesses. I represent northwest part of the state. They're there all the time dropping off PowerPoint decks with incentives to our businesses, where our workers are, to steal our jobs. It happens all the time. And, you know, we just got to be more aggressive in protecting our economy and growing our economy and figuring out ways to cut taxes for our families and lower costs. Like, we got to, it's enough. And, you know, what New York is doing, and they all nickel and dime us and stick it to us. And I'm just saying it's enough already, and I'm sick of it.
You bring up Pennsylvania because that's a point that's been made for a while here, that we've had migration out of the state, and some of it has gone next door to Pennsylvania, where taxes are lower. There's a lower tax burden there. Some people even work in New Jersey, but then go home to Pennsylvania and take that money with them. What would be your plan in terms of taxes? Because I know income taxes, you say you want to lower those. You want to lower property taxes. How would you do that? Would you try to compete with Pennsylvania's rates, or would you just try?
Well, the good news is I'm going to be putting out my tax cut plan imminently, and you can have me back on and we can talk about it. But in the meantime, right? And I mean, listen, you're right that they're taking our jobs and our dollars. They, you know, like I'm still getting over the fact they took Saquon Barkley from me. You know, so that's been, you know, that's been a sore point on top of it. But you know, and we'll go over that. But look at SALT, right? I mean, the state local tax deduction or SALT, which we're working incredibly hard to restore. I've multiple times now gotten legislation passed out of the House, only to die by these red moocher states in the Senate who kill it. But you know, what I have said consistently is we've got to restore the state and local tax deduction. We've got to expand it and give tax cuts to our families so people can deduct their property taxes and their income taxes before paying their federal taxes so they can get a tax cut. And you know, we're working right now, I co-chair the SALT caucus. There's a group of us who have been working on this issue for years and are working with the incoming administration to make sure we restore more of the SALT deduction and give people a tax cut. And this is for real middle-class families here in Northern New Jersey, and it's time they get a tax cut.
Yeah, let's talk more about SALT, because that is an issue that's been brought up, especially by the president-elect. And there's a group of blue state Republicans that went down to his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago, to push for SALT to be included in a big reconciliation bill that he's looking to pass early in his next term. Based on what you're hearing, how likely is it for SALT to be a part of that bill?
You know, listen, it's always early, and it's early in this whole process, as you know, and this thing's going to have lots of twists and turns. I think SALT will be brought back and expanded, the deduction expanded in what's proposed, but you got to see the final details. This is going to go back and forth a lot, and I'm going to judge it on the overall impact on Jersey and our families, right? So we're pushing very hard to bring SALT back. The president has said he's open to it. The president-elect, I should say, has said he's open to it. And obviously the Republicans from blue states met with him about that. I've written to the incoming administration about the fact that SALT should be part of it so we can cut taxes for our families. You're talking about millions of families in New Jersey that would get a tax cut. So this is a very big priority for us and what I'm going to continue to focus on.
Now, in terms of SALT, obviously, it's going to be a part of this big bill with something else if the negotiations go the way people like you and a lot of blue state Republicans are hoping for. But it also could include some stuff that you may not be a fan of particularly. But you said earlier you'd work with anyone if it's good for Jersey. If there was something in this bill where you saw it was included, it was going to be put in the way you'd like it, but it has some stuff you necessarily weren't a fan of, could you still commit to voting that?
Well, as I said, you know, I'm going to look at the totality of the bill and its impact on the families in Jersey and make a decision, right? I mean, obviously, you don't have the bill. I don't have the bill. We don't have the details. It'd be really premature for me to say whether I'm for something or against something that I've never, ever seen. But it's going to be a question of what's in there, what's the overall impact on families in New Jersey, and then we'll make a decision. And in the meantime, I'm going to fight every day to make sure that we expand SALT and we get it in there.
Now, the age-old debate has been with this whole SALT and property tax stuff is how much of the burden should be solely on SALT and how much should be on the state taxes, meaning the state legislature taking action. What is the balance for you here? How much should we just relying solely on getting SALT back as well as lowering the property taxes here at the state level?
Well, you know, as I said, you know, I'm going to put out a pretty thorough plan on how I want to focus on cutting taxes and cutting costs in Jersey for families. So more to come on that. But in the meantime, there's no reason why we should ever get taxed twice on the same income, which is why the SALT deduction was around for more than a century at the levels it was, right? Because people shouldn't get taxed twice on the same income. And I believe that principally, and it's why we should have SALT deduction expanded and back. and why it makes sense for us to have that deduction. And frankly, we pay far more into the national kitty here in Jersey through federal taxes than other states. And we get back historically less than we pay in. And I've always said we got to claw more back to Jersey from Washington and away from the moocher states that, you know, that not only get more back, but for what they pay in, but then they also have done very, they didn't care about salt at all and stuck it to us in 2017. And so we're getting hit twice here. If we're going to make life more affordable in Jersey and get taxes down, we're going to actually have to both get more salt back, which is what we're pushing for, and of course, address taxes in the state.
Yeah, there's definitely a mix that has to occur here. Now, before I let you go here, I got to ask you the overall big picture here. You are running for governor. You're running as a Democrat. Historically, neither party has been able to hold the governor's mansion for three consecutive terms. How do you plan on defying that history?
By winning.
What's the plan? We know you want to win, but like beyond
winning. Listen, man, what I'm talking to people about, and I've been to diners now, I think in 20 counties or 19 counties, and the conversation is the same everywhere that I'm having. People want life to be more affordable, whether you're talking about childcare, healthcare, the utility bills, the rent, or their taxes. They want us to help make their life more affordable. That is what I'm running as, right? The lower taxes, lower cost governor who actually solves problems, right? Who gets stuff done. And you know, I've got a long record of working with everybody to get stuff done, stuff that people said is impossible. And so I'm going to build on that. And as I talk to voters and have the resources to talk to voters about what I'm focused on, they'll see that they want somebody like me who can solve problems for them and get stuff done for them. That's what I do. I work with folks and get stuff done. And, you know, the good news is I've got a long track record of proof to do that, whether you're talking about the infrastructure bill to help build the Gateway train tunnel or fix our roads and bridges and rail, or things that people say were impossible, like a bipartisan common sense gun safety bill that was done with Democrats and Republicans. People said it was impossible, or the CHIPS Act. We build semiconductors in the United States, or, you know, take on issues like climate. So we have more resources to deal with all the flooding we're dealing with here in New Jersey. Right. I mean, things that people said, could you really work out a deal here? And that we've been able to work out by working together. And that will continue to be my approach of getting stuff done. I'm very focused on getting costs down for people and getting their taxes down. That is what I'm a really big believer in, and that's what we're going to get done. And I think when people see that and see my record and listen to what I'm proposing, they're going to vote for me. And that's what this is about. I'm someone who can work with everybody to get stuff done for them.
Yeah, we'll have to see where this all goes. Democratic gubernatorial candidate and New Jersey 5th District Democratic Congressman Josh Gottheimer, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate
it. Thanks, man. That was fun. I really appreciate it. Hope you'll have me back.
Well, that about does it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me as always. To stay in touch with what's going on the show, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on X at @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, in case you just found the show for the very first time, you're like, oh my God, I love the show. It's so great, but where do I find it? Well, here's what you need to do. You have to go to that browser of yours. You got to type in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that in, it's going to take you right to the Fox Sports New Jersey podcast page. You're going to scroll down till you find In the Middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that, and all the episodes will be there. You'll see the newest ones at the top and the older ones at the bottom. We typically put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Now, normally we are, but next week we are taking off for the holiday. I know, big week, but we will have a lot to talk about when we return. So I will not be doing a show next week, but I will be back the following week. So come back and join us in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about the new Trump administration, what they've been up to, what they're hoping to accomplish, and what the reaction is like out there. And of course, gubernatorial race. That's coming up. Two debates are actually in less than a month. And might have a little surprise regarding that. I will reveal that next show. Thank you so much for listening. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back again in 2 weeks with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports, New Jersey.